With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Screen Talk, NewWire's weekly movie podcast. I'm Eric Cohn, the executive editor and chief critic, joined not by my usual sparring partner, Ann Thompson, who's on break ahead of Cannes, but I'm very happy to have a stand-in who will be alongside us in the front lines of cinema trying to reboot itself in the south of France next week. David Ehrlich, my partner in crime as a critic on the ground. How are you holding up, David, looking ahead to what appears to be an actual Cannes Film Festival after a year of silence?
Yeah, I'll believe it when I see it. I mean, I know the festival is happening full steam ahead, but it still feels so surreal from reality as we've known it for a while. And there are so many obstacles between now and then us where we are today in New York and the south of France that I'm trying not to count my chickens before they hatch, but I am very excited.
Yeah, I remember because when you went to Cannes for the first time, I was so excited to see your reaction to it because everybody's first Cannes is so mind-blowing. No matter what you know or you think you know going into it, like the mythology of it, to be on the ground, to experience so much cinema from around the world and an industry and a crowd of people who are like committed to it is really amazing when you live in America where cinema is often not at the forefront of our culture. So right now, especially, it feels like we're in for a really fascinating experience in terms of how, you know, this art form is working overtime to come back.
Yeah, I mean, every festival has that sense of whatever movie is screening is sort of the most important thing that's happening on Earth at that moment. But can the sheer volume of that feeling against when you balance it against the kinds of movies that are generating that attraction, that attention is just such a spectacle. I mean, to see the fervor around, let's say, like the world premiere of, Petrov's Flu or like, right. A new Nanny Moretti movie. It always sort of blows your mind.
Yeah, I mean, I remember going to see a Nuri Bilge Ceylan film. It was like 2 hours and 45 minutes or maybe longer. That would be short for him. And it was like such a physical feat to get into that screening. You know, no matter what you do, you plan ahead, you're dealing with these crazy crowds and stuff, which turns some people off, understandably, from the outset. But the bottom line is that there's also a lot of enthusiasm for these movies because ultimately, if every country has its own little industry and community of moviegoers and you bring them all into one place, you do end up seeing the scale of that. And that's kind of what keeps this worthwhile. I mean, I don't want to like drool all over Cannes. I mean, there's other festivals out there that are really good. And we got the Locarno and Karlovy Vary lineups this past week, which look promising. And we've talked a lot about the fall season. But what I think is really fascinating about Cannes is I don't even know where to begin. I mean, with 75 movies now, something like that, that's not a lot for some festivals, but for a festival that's supposed to be super discerning, it's pretty high. I mean, how are you feeling about the workload and stuff?
I mean, I think it's easier for the number of movies playing at Cannes to feel overwhelming than it is elsewhere, because Cannes, at least in my experience, puts such a narrow spotlight on one film at a time. I mean, that's sort of the nature of the competition. Obviously, there are the sidebar characters, so maybe the sidebar categories, rather. So maybe there is a hubbub around one movie that's playing in that ballet, and then down the street, you know, sandwiched in between the two movies that are in competition that day, there is something else that's garnering attention. But for the most time, it feels like the whole sort of Sauron's eye of the film world is pointed at one movie at a time. And obviously with 70 movies playing or whatever the number is playing at the full scale of the festival, that isn't really going to be possible. I think a number of movies that may have stood out elsewhere may inevitably be swept under the rug or fall through the cracks. But I do think that there's so much pent up excitement that hopefully we'll be able to spread the wealth a little bit.
Yeah. So let's talk a bit about things we can talk about, because we've been watching movies and we're really appreciative, obviously, of the powers that be that set up early screenings, because one, I mean, some people can't go, and so setting up early screenings does allow these movies to have a magnified presence, but also because there's so much uncertainty about what the experience is going to be like. As we're recording, we still don't even have a full schedule. We apparently, even though we are thoroughly vaccinated, need to spit into a petri dish every 2 days to prove that we're safe to go into the Palais. So there's going to be a lot of craziness on the ground and unpredictability even more than usual. So we don't even know how we're going to navigate all this stuff, but we know that there are films we want to see.
Yeah. And that's the only certainty at this point.
So tell me what you're excited to see at this point, because
one movie that as of this recording I genuinely haven't seen and I've been dying to for years on end is Mia Hansen Loves Bergman Island. And I was especially excited, as much as I would have loved to have seen it earlier at another festival, I was especially excited that it's going to premiere in Cannes and in competition no less, just because I have long found her to be such a powerful and exciting filmmaker, and this is a real shot of validation for her. I mean, she's been sort of working up the ranks for a long time, with starting even before The Father of My Children, but certainly with that and Goodbye First Love and then Eden and the future things to come, you know, so on. And Bergman Island, you know, a movie shot on and sort of about Faroe Island and about Ingmar Bergman's legacy, obviously feels like catnip for cinephiles and can, but that it was deemed worthy of the competition is just really exciting for me. So that's really high on my list.
Yeah, I'm excited about a lot of the competition films. I mean, a movie like Annette being opening night and in competition, while, you know, the new Wes Anderson film is there, and, you know, all these kind of higher profile movies alongside something like the Mia Hansen Love film, which is sort of maybe more in the middle. And then you have films like Petrov's Flew that you mentioned earlier, a much wider array of stuff that seems like it's going to just completely complicate the narrative each day. And that's something people don't always get until they start following Cannes coverage, is like, there's an arc to it. Like, you see a movie in competition, you're like, you better prove yourself, competition movie. And then like another day comes along and it's like, oh, well, that really upends the narrative. And then, you know, you look at the programming slots and you're like, well, why is that movie later and this one is earlier? And we don't really know, because there's so many movies, if it's because of timing issues and someone's not done, or is it because of some other reason?
I think what you're saying is accurate, especially in that, you know, I think this year the presumptions that people make about the, like, looking at the matrix of the schedule and the conclusion they come to are probably going to be disproven even more sort of embarrassingly than they have been in the past. And as excited as I am to see someone like Mia Hansen Love in competition, it really isn't a slight to see someone like Joanna Hogg in Director's Fortnight or Coconata, where, you know, there's some of my favorite films, the standout films from previous Cannes that I've been, have premiered, you know, because the competition as a entity is a narrative unto itself. And I really, one of my favorite pieces every year that I encourage everyone listening to this to follow along, Eric, is your daily updated rankings of the competition film. They give you a
rat race
sense, yeah, of that feeling of, like, you know, everyone is constantly waiting for the next swerve in the road. And it's really exciting.
And the moment that the Palme d'Or ceremony happens, it's totally irrelevant, because it can be so wrong, right? Those decisions happen like moments before they're announced, pretty much. And there may be some jurors who, you know, get a little drunk at a party and tell somebody what they really like or didn't like, and then that gets around and we hear about it and that forms some rumor, but it doesn't really mean anything until they actually get down to brass tacks. And over the years you hear rumors about, I mean, this stuff can get intense. We have Spike Lee as the president of a jury that is incredibly international and sophisticated in terms of its film knowledge. I mean, it's really remarkable, from Tahar Rahim to Kleber Mendoza Filho. I mean, it's like, it's such a fascinating range and so unpredictable. And whatever you think you know about people based on, like, their work is often wrong, because somebody who makes really experimental stuff might like something really populist, or the other way around. So.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's not really until you start hearing those reports about who actually was invited back to the award ceremony at the end that ever you realize that, yeah. You know, the fantasy you've been living in as to what is worthy of these awards kind of goes out the window.
I think I said Rat Race before, but really it's more like it's like a betting race. I mean, people actually do bet money on this stuff, and it's a crazy thing to bet money on. It's not like the Oscars. Like, there isn't any science.
There are no precursors whatsoever. You know, it's... But,
no, I was just going to say, I love the jury press conference at the end where you hear from jurors about how much they're willing to share. Like, when it turned out that Will Smith really liked that that Cornell Mundrusco film that nobody else really seemed to like, Jupiter, what was it called?
Jupiter Ascending, Jupiter's Moon, I think.
Jupiter's Moon, yeah. So that it was like that sort of thing where it was like, okay, Will Smith had a Cannes experience, you know, on a jury with Pedro Almodovar and stuff. So, I mean, I just love that sort of synthesis. There isn't like a movie star of that magnitude. I mean, Maggie Gyllenhaal is somebody who I think is very, you know, knowledgeable about international cinema, and I'm super curious to know.
I don't know, Song Kang-ho, especially after Parasite. True.
He's a big deal. You know, I mean, look, it's a great jury.
Yeah, it should be exciting. I mean, I think you're talking about that press conference at the end. I can only hope that Spike Lee is as forthcoming as he is, you know, in every other arena of his life there, and really dishes the dirt on what he thought about things. But it is such a wide, just looking at the competition lineup, it's such a wide swath. You have past winners like Apichat Pongwers Athakul, who's his first movie since Uncle Boonmi with Memoria. There are someone like, there's Satan. There is Sean Baker's in the competition up from Directors Fortnight, where
Red Rocket
premiered.
Yeah.
And then on the smaller end, a movie I'm really excited to see is the Ryusuke Hamaguchi film, Drive My Car, which, it's his second film of this year already after Wheel of Fortune and Fantasy, which did very well for itself at Berlin. And the last time that a Haruki Murakami adaptation played at Cannes, it was Burning and did not win a jury prize, but I think everyone remembers it fondly. So that's also super exciting.
Yeah, it did play really well, and it helped Steven Yeun, a new Academy member as of this week, Steven Yeun, sort of elevate his profile in a way which set him up for the next phase of his career. So that there was some good that came out of that, irrespective of all of these things.
Yeah.
So.
Although I think if like gun to my head, if I had to pick one movie that I'm most curious about at this point, it would probably be a Nadav Lapid's Ahed's Knee, just because Synonyms was such a mind blower. All three of his films, The Kindergarten Teacher.
Yeah, he's an amazing director. Yeah.
And Maggie Gyllenhaal, the star and I think producer of the American remake of The Kindergarten Teacher, is an interesting crossover. But
compromise. Everybody's compromised. I mean, Sean Penn has worked with people on this jury. I mean, it's... Who knows how those conversations go?
Oh, yeah, it's just some fun connections. Yeah, just fun connections to draw. I'm not even saying that they're biased towards them, but Yeah, and we were talking off mic before we started recording about how that is one of a number of films from Israeli filmmakers this year, and obviously was such a particularly intense historical moment. And Nadav Lapid is, you know, no filmmaker, certainly no Israeli filmmaker, has wrestled more with Israeli identity, particularly regards to masculinity and militarism. And you have Ari Folman's Where's Anne Frank, that sort of addresses, not about Israel so much, but addresses Jewish identity. I mean, all these things are going to feed into it in a really interesting way.
The Jews are coming to Cannes. A lot of countries are coming to Cannes. It feels like there are going to be so many fascinating takes, because there's the more of the lineup you see, the more you're just absorbing a sophisticated window into what cinema is right now. And that's not to say it's a complete vision, but it is one particular vision, and from probably the strongest festival brand in the world. I mean, there are arguments against going to Cannes if you get, say, you know, Un Certain Regard or competition in Locarno or whatever, but most people would rather go to Cannes anyway. So that's sort of why I think the argument is very strong, that when you look at this lineup, you know, there's just going to be a lot of reasons to pay attention to the films that do end up being there, including stuff it's like a total mystery. I mean, I'm excited for everything we've talked about, as well as a lot of the directors' Fortnight films and some of the first-time directors. But the fact that Gaspar Noé shot a movie during the pandemic is probably the most exciting kind of Cannes-specific event movie you can think of. This movie, Vortex, starring Dario Argento, of all people, because somehow Gaspar Noé movies at Cannes always end up having this really amazing kind of life cycle, even if it's like they don't go over well. I mean, like Love started like 2 hours late at 2 a.m. or something like that in the Palais, and like the movie was okay, but the experience was so wild that it kind of brought something else to it. Lux Aeterna, I thought, was like going to a rock concert on, you know, some crazy drugs that haven't been invented yet. And then it never came out.
Right, I was going to say, I still associate that movie just with that Cannes screening that I didn't go to, but just heard about secondhand. It sounded
it
like
just it just exists this, there.
It's like, you know, epileptic fit for 45 minutes.
Well, but that raises another important point, right? Like if a movie plays at a film festival and then the rest of the world never gets a chance to see it, does it really exist? You know, I mean, we're going to talk about all this stuff, but we don't really know what the ripple effect is going to be in the long term.
Yeah, I mean, there are, I mean, sometimes those are the most interesting festival experiences. I still remember Mektub, My Love, Intermezzo, all four, you know, butt-shaking hours of it from whatever Cannes it was. I think it was 2019. And that movie has not seen the light of day, as far as I can tell, in any country. So, you know, the fact that you were there for its one and only screening is an experience that makes going to a festival, making that trek, all the more worthwhile, even if the film itself is kind of, you know, what it is.
But, you know, the festival world also can be really valuable for, at this particular moment, for bringing films into the conversation that would otherwise just sort of get forgotten in the first place. I mean, this year in particular, it's going to be fascinating to see how people who are looking to kind of make a big impact choose to make their moves. I mean, I'm very curious about some of the US distributors that are there. Neon has tons of movies. Titane, which you mentioned. I mean, if anyone's seen the trailer for that, you know how wild that looks. If you haven't seen the trailer for that, I usually am not a big fan of watching trailers before you see the movie, but this thing is like just so mind-bogglingly wild. It's worth checking out. A24's got the Sean Baker movie, as well as stuff like Souvenir 2, and just the range in that particular comparison is fascinating. From, you know, the kind of what I assume is sort of a naturalistic story of a fading porn star to you know, the second part in this like beautifully textured portrait of a young filmmaker coming of age. And Souvenir, the first part, never came out in France. So in Directors Fortnight, they're showing both parts. And I think that's really fantastic, because it's using Cannes as a platform to kind of give this complete, now complete work, the sort of identity that it never really got in the first place. So
yeah, I mean, the Cannes brand that you were sort of referring to by name earlier is so strong, lest we forget, that they put the laurels on films last year that would never have the opportunity to actually play in a real festival because it was the festival was canceled, but they still, you know, minted those films as being Cannes approved, because that's how far it takes them. And I remember, you know, seeing and reviewing a handful of them because they were brought to our attention as a result of that and were all strong. I'm thinking of films like Slalom or Nadia Butterfly, which is a fascinating movie, which is actually going to sneak onto MUBI in July, right when the festival is starting. So, you know, the Cannes brand, they don't even need the event itself to actually take place in order for that stamp of approval to work its magic.
Last thing we should talk about is the kind of weirdness of living in two worlds when you become a film festival type of person, when you're oriented towards looking at this huge crop of movies, but are also aware that there are so many other kinds of films that come out that are not quote unquote festival films that just don't circulate there. You in particular have had to live in both worlds because you're pre-screening all these Cannes movies and you also have to review like Fear Street.
Yeah.
And F9 is going to play at Cannes on the beach, but it, you know, Black Widow is opening it. Like there's this whole other kind of world of especially American movies that are so far removed from the Cannes conversation. And I'm curious to know how you feel about sort of trying to process those two things at the same time.
I think it's helpful to remember that whatever it is you're watching through a pinhole. And there is always just this greater constellation of stars and space that's happening beyond you. And I think being at Cannes and seeing the confluence of people, I mean, obviously, you know, Cannes has had issues of representation, representing not just, you know, the types of filmmakers, but the countries around the world and cultures, yeah. But it's still such a confluence of people and broadens your, you're looking at the market, which may not be in action this year, but in previous years, just reminds you how many shapes and flavors this industry takes on. You know, it's helpful. It's helpful to go from one of the movies we've discussed screening, you know, yesterday morning, and immediately having to go and sit in a Starbucks and write about the Tomorrow War. You know, like it's helpful to have that sense of one is a movie and the other thing is also a movie, and right. They are both sort of commodities in their own way, and yeah. They'll have their own life spans, but they exist in the same shared universe, maybe not in the same way that The Souvenir and The Souvenir Part 2 do, but in the way that we all do. And it's always helpful to keep that perspective, even if it can make you feel like you're, you know, I was going to say your brain is split down the middle, but I guess biologically that's already the case. But you know what I mean. And that's the fun of a film festival is being in one little snow globe of a movie and then sprinting across the street right when the lights go down and suddenly having to reorient yourself to an entirely different experience. And so after the last 18 months, however long it's been, the idea of orienting myself into a different experience sounds lovely. So,
yeah, it's fascinating too, because you know, I was thinking about, like, I saw Black Widow. I thought it was pretty good for what it is, and I think that if people actually go see it in movie theaters, they'll have a fine time. But that category of experience, when you're totally absorbed in the process of looking at movies from all over the world, feels so minor to me in the grand scheme of things. Like the Black Widow type of event movies will always have some kind of role to play in our culture, and maybe they'll just all become TV shows or they'll become interactive roller coaster XR experiences that happen to have the MCU logo at the start of them, or who knows what direction that's heading. But what we're talking about is like freewheeling creative people telling stories or just like making stuff largely on their own terms, and then somebody else like finding a space to show it. And that just feels to me like that's so much more important culturally, because from a historical standpoint, we're always going to need that, because we're always going to have creative people just like making stuff, and somebody's got to figure out a way to showcase it.
And so, I think this, you know, after there are a lot of conversations that we don't need to wander into as far as, you know, the value of streaming versus theatrical and so on, but going to a premiere at Cannes and seeing the reverent standing reaction that the filmmakers get before the film starts, when everyone, you know, sort of pro forma stands up and you really feel like you are in this holy sacred space for cinema, it is for sickos like us, it is going to be restorative, I think, just to remember that the integrity of the and the ceremony of the film going experience that even the good movies we've seen over the last 18 months have been deprived of. So
you've inspired me. I need to play something for you right quick that I just pulled up.
Oh boy. Yeah. Raul.
And you know what I'm looking at. That slow crawl up the 3D staircase.
I see those stairs in my dreams.
They have not changed in the 15, 14 times I've been to Cannes. They have never changed this thing. It is not officially online, I don't think, anywhere, but there's always people like bootlegging it in the theater. Like, it's so exciting to see the 3D Cannes crawl when Carnival of the Animals plays that everybody needs their own like pirated version of it. But yeah,
there's something to be said for tradition. You know, I love going to Toronto every year and seeing the new bumpers, because some of them are so much fun. But I also love that at Berlin and Cannes, you know, it's like, kind of like a Madeleine, you know, it's like you always know you're gonna get it, takes you right back to I don't know where you're supposed to be.
Cannes is ritual, man.
Yeah,
forget about the Jewish films this year, we have a religion. That's sort of the way it breaks down.
Yeah, I should stop calling it a church and start calling it a temple.
Yeah, I know, right? do your people proud. Yeah. So I'll see you there with your new tux, right?
Yeah, my $150 that I've still yet to take out of the box, but just needs to fit on my body. Give it a try on tonight. Yeah, they don't care how high quality the tux is as long as it fits the basic, you know, dictionary definition.
Yeah, you just gotta look like a penguin sweating in the heat, basically. Yeah. As Thierry Frémaux said, so hot but so good.
So hot but so good. That should be their motto this year.
Well, safe travels, David. I'll see you in the south of France.
Looking forward to it.
Thanks for being here.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.